Welcome to Spark My Muse, everyone. Today, my guest is Marcia Hyatt, the host of Best of Ourselves podcast, one of my favorite new podcasts I've subscribed to recently, and it's 5 power-packed minutes. I have a special thank you for Marcia today because she's actually a repeat guest. You don't know that listening to this now, but she's very generous of spirit, and the last time we recorded this, I wasn't able to actually keep that recording. And so thank you again, Marcia, for being on the show a second time.
Well, I love talking to you, Lisa. So that's the good part. It's a lot of fun.
Well, beyond doing a podcast, tell my listeners some of the other things you do and a little bit about you, if you don't mind.
Oh, sure. My work is as a leadership coach and leadership facilitator. I've worked in the whole question of how do we grow and become our best selves for many decades.
What I wanted to converse about today was some of the wonderful insights you've shared from 2 of your episodes specifically. They really touched me, these 2 particular episodes, and I thought that my listeners would really appreciate it. I consider our podcast to kind of be almost crossover kind of kindred spirit podcasts, and so I know that my listeners will be excited to tune into yours. And actually, a friend of mine already said she's already hooked. So,
oh, that's lovely. Thank you.
Sure, but beginning with episode 85, it's called Witness, and this is different than a witness, like someone giving a testimony or in a court of law or something like that. It sometimes means to people to tell something, but in the way you use the word witness within this episode as meaning be with, could you get into that a little bit?
Well, sure. Well, that particular episode started out with an experience, many of them do, and telling a friend about something that was going on in my life, and they had all this really quick advice for me. And I thought, I know you're trying to be helpful, but that's not what I needed. And what I needed was someone to really listen. And so that's my reflection. That particular episode was, what does it mean to really be with, wholeheartedly, fully present, and witness another person's story?
So it has a lot to do with making space for a person and not so much conversing and sharing stories and things like that, but just someone to say, maybe not to say anything, but just sort of witness what you're going through.
Exactly. I mean, it could be empathy. It could be possibly sharing your own experience. But we so often, and I'm guilty of this too, so I'm not saying I'm pure here, but we so often go to advice like, okay, well, here's what you got to do. What you got to do is say no, say yes, do whatever it is that we so quickly give to each other. And with, I think often with the best of intention, often, you know, I want to be helpful here. However, you don't walk in my shoes, and you may not even know really what my situation is. And so it's not actually helpful. It's so much more powerful to learn how to sort of zero out my agenda, my stuff, and really be there with you and be curious about your experience and be there without judgment and there wholeheartedly, open-heartedly.
That is really hard sometimes, especially if we're used to helping or, you know, I'm a mom, I might be in mom mode, like, okay, how do we solve this problem?
Exactly. And it's so much in our culture. I mean, in American culture, it's so much, well, let's just fix this thing.
Yeah.
as if we human beings are something to be fixed, which we are not. And that's, I think that's like the sort of underlying falsehood, is we don't need to be fixed. We certainly can grow and learn, but we're not machines. We don't need to be tweaked. And the gift of actually being there, we undervalue that level of presence, that level of open-heartedness that we can give each other. Instead, you know, I know often I'll do advice because I'm like, I want to be fast. It's like, well, you know, just do this. And there's a bit it's got a bit of a transactional quality to it. And sometimes in my not so pretty moments, I may be giving advice because I think I know. I think I know what you should do. And that's a form of dominance in a way. It's like, how would I know what you should do? How do I know what your path is? And so I've read a couple different people, first being Peter Block, who called advice giving as a form of dominance. And I thought, oh, that's harsh. But in hindsight, looking on my own, when I've done it, it has come from this place of, well, I know what you should do, which is like, well, that's a really arrogant kind of stance that I've taken. And now, again, a lot of it comes from this place of, I want to be helpful. I love you. I care about you. And it's not that it's not from a good place. It's just, is it the most powerful way to be with each other?
Recently, I was reading a lot of Parker Palmer, and he talks about listening others into being. And that has a lot to do with this. And one of the quotes you mentioned in the episode was about Henry Nouwen, who talks about listening as a form of spiritual hospitality. There's this thing about witness and listening that is hospitable, that cares for someone, even though it just seems like this passive thing. And so maybe you can explain a little bit more deeply what we're looking at there.
Well, and we mentioned Parker Palmer in the Quaker tradition. The assumption is that the answers are within, and the spark of the divine and spark of your essential nature is there in you. The answers are there. And so what I understand as spiritual hospitality is that I trust in you. I trust that I see the divine. I see that the beauty of you. And I am open to that. I guess I don't know how else to say that. There's a quality of quiet, spacious, non-judgmental, loving, all those things. And I love what you said about Parker's quote. It is because if you give people that space to do that reflection, maybe ask questions, maybe share a story from your own life, not as hidden advice, but as a just, oh, you know, here's what I know about that for me. That could possibly open them up to accessing their own inner wisdom.
Yeah, the inner teacher, he talks about that the inner teacher has wisdom and different ways of knowing that just teaching techniques and information dumps never really satisfy.
Yeah.
In the same sort of ways.
Well, and that other and different ways of knowing, often you know things in your body that your head hasn't gotten yet. So you know it in your gut. I mean, I've had these situations where my gut would seize up every time I did this piece of work. But my head was like, well, no, I like this work. This is good work. I get paid a lot, you know, and I was talking myself into it. But my gut knew it wasn't mine to do. My gut knew I had outgrown that work. And so a lot of times, just that, again, giving that spaciousness around the question, whatever it is, and allowing their heart or their belly intelligence to have a voice in all of this. Because the head tries really hard, but it isn't the whole of our mind.
Yeah, it's that problem-solving calculation part that isn't actually that embodied part of us. It kind of brings us into the next episode that I wanted to talk about, 119, and I'll put links in the show notes to both of these episodes. So episode 119 talks about being with the whole of ourselves. It really kind of dovetails with this idea of being with our whole self, including pain, which we usually run from like crazy. And we have all these tricks to not hold our pain and not work through our pain in ways that could actually help us and teach us.
Yeah. There's good reason we run from it, because it's hard, at least we think, and it's scary. And yet what I have come to believe and experience is that the more I can be present with whatever I'm experiencing and be curious about it, give a little space around it, the more it softens the hold on some of my personality patterns, or my little, I call them my mini me, my little reactive self me, the more I allow myself to, oh, ouch, be with that. That is amazing. And that actually opens me to the whole of who I am, including the parts I've rejected, including the parts like, oh, it's not okay to make mistakes. It's not okay to make mistakes. It's not okay to be thoughtless. It's not okay to be selfish. And yet I'm a human and I have all those in me. And the more I can be compassionate with myself and be present with myself, wow, has it changed my ability to be compassionate and present and non-judgmental of those around me.
The habit we have to change focus, I don't even think we're realizing what we're doing. Most of the time, I don't realize it really at all. I'll just think, oh, I need to blow off steam, or I need to hit the reset button or change the channel. And, you know, it's so habitual. I don't even know that we are really aware. I mean, it's not just cultural, but I think it's just kind of human to like think, oh, yuck, that feels terrible.
I don't want to go there. Exactly. We like comfort.
Yeah. So,
exactly. I mean, when I was reading Gifts of Imperfection by Brené Brown, and I love her work, and this chapter on numbing that's in that book, I thought, well, that doesn't have anything to do with me. I don't have addictions. Well, I probably do with work, but and when I read that chapter on numbing, and I thought, oh my gosh, of course I do. Of course I. When I don't want to feel something, I watch a happy movie, I change the channel, I work out, I have a glass of wine, I eat some chocolate. All these things that are, some are more constructive than others, but all of them are still taking me away from my experience. And the more I am not just tolerant, but accepting and honest with myself, really honest with myself about what's going on here and now, and then hold that with compassion, which is the tricky part because it's really hard, the more I see the limits of my old story. You know, we have these, like, this is how things have to be narratives in our head that aren't the truth of the whole of us. For example, I made some mistakes. Ah, crazy. I'm a human. I made some mistakes, but I hate making mistakes. Hate it. And I got an email saying, oops, I think this was wrong. And then something else I had omitted. And I noticed I was feeling awful. And usually I would change. I mean, like, just like you said, Lisa, I'm a master at reset, change the channel, think positive, you know. And again, there's lots of gifts in thinking positive, but there's also even more gifts in being with what is. So there I am feeling nauseated, tight in my chest, and thinking, okay, what's going on? Yeah, oh, this is my inner critic having its field day with me around these mistakes that I made, and what's that feel like, and what am I noticing? And I'm allowing myself to be with that wash of ick that is my inner critic experience. And then I'm with that. I give a little space around it, a little curiosity. So what is my inner critic telling me right now? It's telling me that I'm a bad person because I made a mistake. Well, is that true? No. I made a mistake. Yeah. And I can do something about that. But allowing myself to be with that harsh inner territory allowed me to sort of soften a little bit. It's like, wow, this is really hard. And then because I've studied a little bit of Kristen Neff's work in self-compassion, I put my hand on their heart and just said, wow, I'm really being hard on myself right now. Okay, yeah, that's true. And what else is true? And then for some reason, I just dropped in with my head was, but you know, making a mistake doesn't make you a bad person, it just makes you human. And there's other things that are also present here right now. So let's look around. And I looked around, I thought, oh, I'm in this beautiful setting, I've got a warm bed, I've got food in the refrigerator. And so it wasn't like I switched to the positive right away, like let's, you know, switch to gratitude. It came naturally from allowing myself to be with that inner critic and sort of softening the hold of it and seeing, wait a minute, it's not true that I'm a defective human being because I made a mistake. I don't buy that narrative anymore. Not that I'm not going to have that inner critic, you know, it's been there for a long time. I'm just getting more resilient with it. I'm more able to, as opposed to it driving me, I sort of notice what's going on, be with it, and nudge it out of the driver's seat a little bit.
Yeah, it's like if the inner critic is just about, oops, you made a mistake. But if it gets personal, then the inner critic's kind of useless, you know, if it's a shaming inner critic. But if it's just like, hey, you made a mistake. But I always think about, like you're saying, asking your pain questions, like, all right, what's going on? And sitting with it just a bit longer than you're comfortable with can start to untwine things from this bundle of discomfort and fear usually.
I love that. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, and I always think if we're so harsh on ourselves, we can be harsh on other people. But a lot of times if someone made a mistake, just like you did, you wouldn't say, well, you're, you know, rotten to the core.
Exactly. doctor.
Say that of somebody. You must be just born defective. No, you wouldn't. You would never say that. You'd say, that stinks, that we'll have to do that over, or there was a mistake. But you know what? We're just going to get over it.
Yeah, and exactly. And I love the way you talked about it. It does soften. It sort of like untwines a knot. And even if it's something that's not inner critic, but just a story that you've been telling yourself for a long time. Like another one for me was the story that I grew up with a single mother, really poor. And so this bag lady, you know, oh my God, oh my God, am I going to have enough? Oh my God. And I was working with a coach who did what you described, like, okay, so where are you experiencing these fears? And I was noticing this like Chicken Little feeling in my chest, like, oh my God, the sky's going to fall in. And my head was figuring out all these answers, how to fix it. And then, but my belly was calm. And so when I sat with that and really sat with that for a long, with my coach, it's like, oh, wait a minute. This is just an old pattern of hysteria that is not really the truth. And when I breathed into my belly, he was just like, no, we're fine. It's all good. It shifted. I've never had that depth of fear that I used to have had for decades around, because I've been self-employed forever, you know, where's the next work coming from? Once I really was able to sit with that fear, it was scary to be with it, but to find the metaphor of Chicken Little, it's like, oh my gosh, well, we know where that ended up.
Yeah. Yeah, that's so interesting, because it was like an old formed habit of, will we have enough? Will we have enough? And then you had learned from experience, like, hey, it does work out. And what's the absolute worst thing that could happen? You know, maybe I move in with a friend for a few weeks or something like that.
Yeah.
In the end, we realize we are terrified sometimes, but if we really challenge that monster and open up that door in that dark room, a little monster runs out, not a giant scary one.
I mean, it'd be a monster. It might be just a fictional character, you know?
Yeah, or flea runs out of the room. Not a monster at all, just like something tiny. But it's true. It's all built up out of habit and out of fears that haven't been questioned in a long time. So they just fester.
Yeah. Well, we do. That's the part of compassion that because I could start beating myself up for not having my act together at my age. And I think, no, wait a minute. You know, I've learned a lot and I am human. And this is part of the human experience, is learning how to soften the hold of those things that we did to stay safe or be in control or to have people like us. We do them and we learn them, like you said, long time ago. And we think they're truth, and they're the truth. They're the truth of who we are, but they're not. We're so much more. There's so much more to us than these stories that we often create for ourselves.
What would you say to somebody who would like to challenge their fears or sit with their pain as kind of some first steps to, if that's really new to somebody, and they feel anxious or they feel like they can't get a handle on some of those things? What would you suggest based on either your own experience or what you've known has worked for other people?
Well, first, just make sure it feels safe. So if it's too big of a thing, maybe get support, because safety is really an important part of this process. But if it's, you know, like a minor league or something that I feel like I really can be with, it's really about sort of just shift your attention to what are you noticing. Usually for me, it's some constriction, like you mentioned earlier, sort of a knot. Usually it's some constriction somewhere, my diaphragm, my head, my heart, whatever. And there's some constriction. It's like, oh, wait, ooh, something's happening. Because our body knows before our cognitive brain knows. So what's going on? So ask some questions. What am I feeling? Can you bring curiosity to it? Can you bring compassion to it? And like, you know, even metaphor, like, so what is this like? What does this feel like? It's as if I have a brick wall. It's as if I have a Roman soldier. It's as if I'm a small fish at the mouth of a shark. You know, just getting sort of playing with metaphor often gives you, wow, okay, that's what's going on. And then just staying with it enough curiosity to understand it, but not to hold it lightly. And with that, that's sort of my one teacher, Roxanne Hal Murphy, calls it conscious cooking. With that, just being with what you're experiencing allows it to, like you said earlier, you understand a little bit more. And it's a flea. It's not this monster. Or it's not, wait a minute, I'm keeping myself small here. Or I'm limiting my options because I think I have to be nice and can't really speak my truth. And so we start to see some of the limits, and it's pretty exciting when you start stretching that story a bit.
I know there's people who have different practices that they do habitually or routinely, like devotional practices or spiritual practices that help keep them mindful and attuned, maybe to be connected with their body or to be connected with their inner world and be more aware of what's happening. Some people do meditation, some people journal. Have you found any of those things helpful?
Yeah, all of them. A lot of it depends. Like I was, and I've been a journaler for decades and decades and decades. And a lot of it's like how you do the journaling.
Okay.
Because sometimes the journaling can just reinforce the story. Oh, it's just awful. Look what they did. Or look how stupid I am. As opposed to journaling that takes you perhaps a little deeper. So, for example, free fall journaling, where you just ask yourself a question and put the pen to paper and write beyond what your head knows. Or journaling where you ask yourself the same question every day. So I've broadened or stretched my repertoire of journaling. I think my first 20 years of journaling are probably pretty repetitious and pretty much the same story. Certainly, like you said, meditation or devotional practice, something that brings a mindful quality to my day. So I, because my capacity to grow has come a lot from my capacity to observe myself and observe my reaction. So both meditation, I did some work with Wendy Palmer, conscious embodiment, just awareness of my reactive. Oh, you know what it feels like when I'm reactive is, and I feel my reactive pattern before my head even knows I'm reacting. And then I can cut it off at the pass, as it were. It's like, wait a minute, what am I reacting to? So that mindful quality meditation is fabulous for that. But even just building in through the day, every time I'm at a traffic light or every time I turn my computer on, just stopping and noticing what's going on right now? How am I feeling? Just bringing myself to the moment is a practice that enables me to be better at catching myself when I'm sliding off the rails a bit.
Yeah, I wound up doing something with my phone where it chimes on the hour, and I'll try to bring myself back into clarity and focus and awareness on the hour. Now, sometimes, of course, it'll just ring and I'll be like, oh, that rang at the wrong time when I was on Skype or something. But also, there are other ways of practicing too. There are probably just as many as there are people in the world. There's one called Exame, and also could maybe just be called like goals, and then end of day review, where people think mindfully in the morning, like, how would I like to respond to people and situations in my day? And then at the end of the day, seeing what went well and what didn't, and how you would like the next day to go. But those habits of instead of just like flying through your day and just trying to get through it and make it through, that there's some kind of understanding about what's happening and how we're reacting and how we're just kind of being with people in our world. There's so much more richness in that. It's hard if you've ever been through a period in your life where you've just been in crisis mode and you never had a chance to look at anything. You've just been trying to survive that. But as you get to a point where there's more spaciousness, or even to create spaciousness where there isn't any, I think that just learning to sit with pain or old things is really, it's completely, anyway, for me, like, having a new life, it's like very rejuvenating.
It's counterintuitive. I mean, when you need it most is when you're, like I said, in crisis or just overwhelmed or whatever. And that's when you need it most. It's like, wait a minute, whoa, let's get our feet on the ground, take a few breaths. One of the things that another technique that I love that I learned from Wendy Palmer, who wrote Leadership Embodiment, was asking yourself a question, like, what would this day be like with a little bit more like kindness, spaciousness, patience, voice, whatever it is you're working on. But instead of doing an affirmation, because affirmations don't work unless you believe them. Like the research says, you know, I am a lovable person. Well, if I don't believe I'm lovable, I actually feel worse doing an affirmation that because I'm lying. We can't lie to ourselves, yeah, right?
Right.
But we can ask ourselves a question. So another one that I use often is if I'm working on a quality, like what would this day be like with a little bit more creative space, which is one of the ones I am working on right now. And just asking that's so you're like end of the day reflection, it becomes a way to say, what was this day like in terms of my intention around creative spaciousness? And it's lovely because it's gentle. And when you ask yourself a question, it pops a bunch of ideas that you haven't even thought of before.
Mm. Yeah. Just asking questions with like an open hand, open-ended and non-judgmental questions. Like, there's no wrong answer. You can't fail
this
test.
Well, that's really true. Because you could beat yourself up. It's like, oh, see, I didn't do it. I'm bad. As opposed to, oh, okay, what did I learn about what got in my way?
Yeah.
And so that learner quality to it is really, I think you've got a really good point there, because it could be a hammer as opposed to a gentle opening, right?
Right, exactly. I was talking to someone recently, and she was talking about, you know, this was a failure, and this was a failure, and this was a failure. And I thought, I would never use that word for what she's saying. Mm-hmm. She had incredible successes. And I said, but what if you use the word experience instead of failure? And it was like, oh, yeah, I guess I actually could probably use the word experience instead of failure, because it was just like, it was valuable. It didn't work exactly how she wanted it to, but it was so judgmental to say it was failure. Like, yeah. Wow, I guess I'm a bad person. It was like, actually, you learned a lot. It was actually really good for the next time.
Exactly. And that's life-changing, what you just suggested, I think, because it opens me up as opposed to, see, this is all I can be, as opposed to, oh, I've had this experience. What did I learn from it? And what will I do with that learning? That is really powerful reframe. And that opens us up to, oh, okay, I'm not limited. My intelligence is not fixed. I can keep learning and growing.
That's been really heartening to me, to learn a lot of new things in neuroscience. I'm an enthusiast lately of learning about the brain and neuroscience, and finding out that really up until you're incapacitated at death's door and you're like 100 and some things, that you can still learn new languages, you can learn how to juggle, and there's no end in sight because the brain is so plastic and can continue to learn. You might not learn as quickly. Yeah, you might not learn as quickly as you did in your teens and 20s, but you can still learn just as well.
Yeah, I love that. And yes, you're right, into your 90s. And yeah. So we have these bogus limits about who we are supposed to be. I just was listening to Ellen Langer talk about counterclockwise about aging. And so can we think this is how it is to be? Well, we actually don't have the limits that we have thought we had in aging in terms of cognitive access or change.
Mm, that's great. Well, as we're winding down, I was hoping that you could, based on what you're working on now and what nugget would you like to leave people with?
Well, you know, I think that the things I wish I had known earlier in my self-discovery journey was how to be kind to myself, how to learn to accept the whole of myself. And that has been so helpful. And to learn that I'm not something to be fixed. I'm not defective. Everything I need, I already have. And a lot of that's building capacity to be present, accepting, loving of myself and all around. So I wish that for myself now and for anybody in this self-discovery journey, because it is, it's almost easier to numb out, but it's not what we're called to do as human beings. I think we are called to grow and see the limits and constrictions that we've created for ourselves. So giving ourselves that space and that patience is it's a really invaluable gift to give.
Totally agree. And I think it does spill over to the people we're with, because we don't really realize that when we're harsh on ourselves, we will be more harsh with other people.
Exactly. It does. You think it's self-centered, but it's actually part of, I think, healing the world. Because the more I can show up as my whole self with my voice and with my heart, I think that changes the energy field around me. It changes how I interact. It changes what we create together.
Well, where can people find you on the interwebs?
Yes. Well, bestofourselves.com is got both the 5-minute shows you mentioned, as well as I do 1-hour shows periodically. And so there's some 1-hour shows interviewing some people that I think are fascinating and around topics like kindness that I think are really interesting. How do we cultivate more? And so the bestofourselves.com or marciahyatt.com is a bit about me.
And I would love it if you would come back once in a while and come back on the show and we can chat a little bit more. Maybe not immediately like we had to do this time, but hopefully in the new year. I would just love to have you back, Marcia.
I love talking with you, Lisa. I'm game. Whenever it makes sense, let's do it. Okay.
Thank you so much.
Take good care.
If you've listened to the show and you've thought, wow, I wish I could find out a little bit more about someone mentioned or a book or a website, that's what show notes are for. Patreon is like patron with an E, patreon.com/sparkmymuse. If you enjoyed the show, please rate it on iTunes. Thank you so much for listening.